Spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The eternal light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Trial and Error, was written by Morton Wishengrad and was based upon the book Trial and Error, the autobiography by Chaim Weizmann, currently being serialized by the New York Herald Tribune and which will be published on January 19th. Featured in the role of Chaim Weizmann is Peter Capel.
Mr. Chairman, I place in nomination the name of Chaim Weizmann.
The name of Dr. Chaim Weizmann has been placed in nomination. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman.
Chair recognizes the provisional Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion.
I rise to second the nomination. I doubt whether the presidency is necessary to Dr. Weizmann, but the presidency of Dr. Weizmann is a moral necessity for the State of Israel.
My name is Chaim Weizmann. I turned toward Zion almost from the first hour of my awareness of the world. I was born 75 years ago in one of the darkest corners of the Pale of Settlement, that prison house created by Tsarist Russia for the largest part of its Jewish population. From childhood, I remember the quiet, matter-of-fact voice of my father saying,
Children, we are in exile.
What freedoms we enjoyed were comparative. How comparative, you in America would hardly understand. When I was 7 years old, Tsar Alexander was assassinated. And on the heels of assassination came a black tide of reaction and oppression.
What is your name?
Otzer Weizmann.
How many children?
15.
How many still living?
12.
Heartiest congratulations. Your tax is 12 silver rubles plus one, 13 rubles.
What for?
It is the new law. Every Jew pays a tax for the privilege of wearing a skull cap in the synagogue.
Not all my children are boys. My 7 girls don't wear skull caps.
Sorry, there is no remission of taxes. 13 silver rubles. There are a few additional taxes. You eat meat?
On the Sabbath, once a week.
There's a tax for eating meat. Also for drinking wine. Also for walking on the public road.
Since when?
Since now. I read to you from, I quote, temporary legislation affecting the Jews.
How long will this temporary legislation last?
My dear Weizmann, nothing in all the dominions of the Tsar is quite so enduring as temporary legislation.
These were the May laws of 1882. Month after month, year after year, ukases against the Jews poured forth from St. Petersburg.
Children, it occurs to me that we should feel ourselves honored. Apparently, the entire machinery of the Russian Empire has been created solely to invent rules for the Jews.
The laws and the regulations were like a slow hangman's rope. And for young and for old, existence became something that was neither life nor death. In the depths of the masses, an impulse awoke. Vague, groping, unformulated. An impulse for self-liberation. It was genuinely of the folk. It was saturated with Jewish tradition, and it was connected with the most ancient memories of the land where Jewish life had first expressed itself in freedom. It was a return to the Holy Land, to Zion. It was Zionism. Almost as far as my memory goes back, I can remember the stampede from the Russian prison house, the tremendous tide of migration which emptied whole villages and towns. It was my father's decision to stay on, to wait.
Education comes first. You must all go to school.
And so I was enrolled in the gymnasium at Pinsk.
You will learn everything. Your education will be extra hands for you. Weapons to help you hold your own in a world that is hostile to you.
The extra hands I chose for myself was the intellectual weapon of chemistry and the philosophy of the return to Zion.
Whose last recorded?
I joined the organization of those who called themselves the Lovers of Zion. In those days, it had to be a secret movement.
You can be heard in the street.
I remind you that if we're detected here, it means arrest for all of us. Bear it in mind. Especially the young people present. Now let's continue.
I have a question.
Yes?
We know that Palestine is ruled by Turkey.
What is the question?
Turkish law forbids the acquisition of land by Jews. Under that law, we can be expelled at any time. My question is, aren't we following a will-o'-the-wisp?
I don't know. All I know is that we will build a land 1 acre and another acre and another acre. One settler and another settler and another settler. One brick, and another brick, and another brick. The thing is to build, never to stop. That's all I know. I read from the prophet Isaiah, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return.
In my 18th year, I was graduated from the gymnasium. Russian universities were closed against me, but doors were still open in Germany. It seems ironical. I studied first in the University of Darmstadt, and then at the Polytechnicum in Berlin. There seemed to be thousands of us in the university cities of Germany. We were the dispossessed young intellectuals of Tsarist Russia, training ourselves in medicine, in engineering, in physics, in biochemistry, in mathematics, in the arts. For what? For whom? We argued about it in concert halls, at meetings, over a game of chess. We were penniless and ragged and vehement and positive. My days seemed endless with laboratories. My nights were fevered with a passion for Israel. And then my years of preparation were done. I had won my degrees in science. I'd received an advantageous offer to do original research in Switzerland. There was a German chemist who congratulated me.
Have another glass of beer, Weizmann.
Thank you.
Don't mention it. It is a pleasure. My friend, I am not a person given to exaggeration, am I?
I don't know, Doctor.
Then I will tell you, I am not a person given to exaggeration. Having said that, I add this. A, it will be remembered with pride that Chaim Weizmann studied here. B, I predict for you a brilliant future in research.
That's very flattering.
Another glass of beer, Weizmann. You are a Jew, of course, but the salt of the earth. Excellent beer. Huh? You are not drinking?
No, Herr Doctor. It suddenly occurred to me that there are two kinds of antisemitism. I would say that your kind is classified as the tender-hearted variety. The antisemitism based upon a compliment.
My dear fellow.
I'm not your dear fellow. As you've said so well, I'm merely the salt of the earth.
You know, Weizmann, for a chemist, you are really very quick. Salt is a very good thing in small quantities. What is your opinion on the subject?
My opinion is that in Russia, the village drunks who broke into the synagogues were crude. They lacked the sophistication of some German doctors of science.
Weizmann, you have a gift of expression. Has anyone ever told you so?
So I went to Switzerland, but I knew that I was still to find my homeland. My life and my strength was like an alternating current between a test tube and a political platform. For wherever I went, I was a spokesman for the Jewish homeland. Not simply the blind need of a people for a place of its own. Need alone is negative. The greatest productions of man spring from an affirmation. And my affirmation was that Zionism was a precipitation into organized form of the survival forces of the Jewish people. In Switzerland, there was someone called Vera who smiled at me for saying that.
Chaim Weizmann, why don't you make up your mind what you are? You can't put Palestine into a laboratory, and you can't talk about Zionism as though it were a chemical formula. Chaim, I'm a medical student. What are you?
A chemist.
Half a chemist. And the other half is something disembodied that attends meetings and writes speeches.
I don't write my speeches. I speak extemporaneously.
Well, which one is the man I'm going to marry? Dr. Chaim Weizmann or the extemporaneous Chaim Weizmann?
Vera, you'll have to take me as I am.
I will. Tell me what you are.
I'm a scientist and a Zionist.
Which one?
Both, Vera.
You poor man. You're torn in two. You're a tug of war with yourself.
Perhaps someday I'll be able to make my scientific training work for Palestine.
Do you believe that?
You don't?
No, because you're not a scientist.
Vera, there's that work with Professor Grebe in Coltard Dyes. Two firms want to buy my patent. All right, Vera, it's nothing. What do you want?
Chaim, I don't want you to be a Luftmensch. Right now, you've got both feet planted squarely in the middle of the sky.
Shall I stop attending meetings? I'd suffocate.
I want a live husband. Chaim Weizmann, you want to help build a homeland.
Yes, Vera.
Then help build it by becoming Dr. Chaim Weizmann's scientist. Not ordinary scientist. Eminent scientist. For a year or two, I want you to get away from the meetings, the political caucuses, the pamphlets, the correspondence, the debates, the hot air. Get out. Get out of Europe. There is stale here. Go to England. Yes, England.
You're here.
I can do without you very well. For a while.
Vera.
I've got to do without you, Chaim. I've got my medical degree to take in Europe. Chaim Weizmann, you're too distracting. Go to England. I'll come.
Wiser than I. She was calmer. Her judgment was sounder. It has always been so. She has saved me many pitfalls. And in 1904, she guarded me from the pitfall that awaits those whose lives are filled only with aspiration, whose accomplishment is only yearning and unfulfillment. And so I gathered my books and I fled to England. I made my way to Manchester University.
I'm afraid, Dr. Weizmann, this isn't much of a laboratory.
It looks wonderful to me, Professor Perkin.
This dingy old basement?
It has a Bunsen flame and rack of test tube. No,
the Bunsen flame is damaged and the test tubes are filthy.
I can fix the one and wash the other.
The taps are thick with grime.
I'll clean them, Professor Perkin. I'll enjoy it.
You're a rather intense fellow, aren't you, Weizmann?
I suppose.
Weizmann, forgive a personal question, but what's your country?
Palestine.
Oh, I see. Born there?
No.
Oh, then you were raised there?
No.
Have you ever been there?
No.
But Palestine's your country.
Sounds a little queer.
It's very decent of you to say so.
Your history is in the lives of the kings of England. Professor Perkin, is my history in the Tsars of Russia?
What do you think?
I think my history is in the kings of Israel. My history book is what you call the Bible. My geography is in the Bible.
My dear chap, what are you doing in this basement in Manchester, England?
I'm trying to earn a visa.
In a laboratory?
Perhaps. I'm sick of talking. My history book tells me that loud trumpets blew down the walls of Jericho. But trumpets and speeches don't build. Neither walls nor houses. I'm going to start building here.
Then may I recommend that you commence this job of building by scrubbing the floor? It's fearfully dirty.
I scrubbed the dirty floor. And then I filled a test tube to observe the reaction between magnesium organic compounds and phthalic anhydrides. I lectured at the university. I embarked upon experiments never performed. I became lost in original research. The Manchester fog seemed thickest in my basement laboratory, and I was tormented by a permanent cold. I missed Vera. And yet, I was supremely happy. Existence was placid, and the world was remote. But not for long. There was a rising young statesman who asked to see me. His name was Arthur James Balfour.
Weitzman, what is it your people needs more than anything else?
A homeland.
Exactly. The British government has offered the Zionist Congress a homeland in Uganda colony. Why has the offer been rejected?
Because Uganda is Uganda and not Palestine.
Oh, but my dear Weitzman, Uganda is open to you, available, begging you.
There's no magic in it, Mr. Balfour.
Now, let's talk like practical, realistic men.
I'm being realistic. When you say the word Palestine, something happens to my pulse. When you say Uganda, I barely hear you. Mr. Balfour, suppose I were to offer you Paris instead of London. Would you take it?
Weitzman, you forget we have London.
You forget also, Mr. Balfour, we had Jerusalem when London was nothing but a marsh.
I have never seen it before in that light. In other words, Zionism does not exist without Zion.
Yes, Mr. Balfour.
Thank you, Dr. Weitzman. I'll be sure to remember that.
All over again, the tug of war, Zionism and biological chemistry, and my own conscience between the hammer and the anvil. Vera was by my side now, and that was a good deal. In the year 1910, I happened upon something new.
What's in the test tube, Weitzman?
Smell it, Professor Perkin. What does it smell like?
Isoamyl alcohol.
Is it? It's a mixture of acetone and butyl alcohol.
How did you get it?
By looking for it. I've worked out a fermentation process.
Excellent. Well, now that you've done it, what good is it?
I don't know.
Splendid. Pour it down the sink.
Professor Perkin, I think I'll save it.
Well, it's your test tube.
Very well, I'm foolish. But it seems to me that no pure chemical is useless. Some experiments go somewhere, some go nowhere. It's always trial and error.
Mark this one down as an error, Weitzman. Pure error.
I was inclined to agree. I poured the stuff down the drain, but I preserved my notebooks. That was lucky. The first war swept over Europe and the world. One day, there was a summons for me.
Dr. Weitzman, you are wanted in London by the British Admiralty. You are to see Sir Frederick Nathan, the head of the powder department.
Sir Frederick?
Dr. Weitzman?
Yes.
Please come in. We've been waiting for you. We've been waiting much longer than you think. Please sit down.
Thank you.
Dr. Weitzman, in order to discharge our naval guns, we employ a propellant.
Cordite?
Exactly. You're familiar with its composition?
In a general way. Cordite is essentially a mixture of nitroglycerin and gun cotton. It is gelatinized, but...
Why do you hesitate, Dr. Weitzman?
I think I understand why you've called me. The nitroglycerin and the gun cotton are gelatinized by acetone.
Exactly.
And the British Admiralty has been told that I've done some work on acetone.
Yes, Dr. Weitzman. Unless we can obtain acetone from some new source, it will mean the immobilization of our naval guns until such time as we can make changes of a far-reaching nature. We can't afford that, Dr. Weitzman.
I understand, Sir Frederick. How grave is the shortage?
Not grave. Calamitous. Will you devote yourself to the problem?
I shall want to establish a pilot laboratory somewhere here in London.
Thank you, Dr. Weitzman. I believe you will hear from the First Lord of the Admiralty, Mr. Winston Churchill.
Well, Dr. Weitzman, we need 30,000 tons of acetone.
30,000 tons?
More or less. Can you make it?
Mr. Churchill, so far, by using a fermentation process, I've succeeded in making...
Yes?
A few hundred cubic centimeters at a time.
Ah.
I do my work in laboratory. I'm not a technician, only a research chemist.
Well, the Navy needs 30,000 tons.
If I'm able to produce 1 ton of acetone, I should be able to multiply it by any factor you choose. Once the bacteriology of the process is determined, it is only a question of brewing.
Dr. Weitzman, I give you carte blanche. What do you need?
I will need a brewing engineer from one of the big distilleries.
You have him? What else?
I want a distillery.
What kind of a distillery?
There's a gin factory in Bromley by Bow.
Gin?
Yes, Mr. Churchill.
You have your gin factory, Dr. Weitzman.
I took upon myself a task which was to tax my energies for the next 2 years, and which was to have consequences which I did not then foresee. We began in Bromley by Bow. We expanded to distilleries scattered throughout England and Scotland and Ireland. Chemists had to be trained, and for that purpose I took over the Lister Institute in Chelsea. We shifted to Canada, America, India, France. And the British Navy got its acetone. Tons. Thousands of tons. When the problem was solved, I met with Churchill, with Balfour, who succeeded him, with Lloyd George. And once again, the center of gravity of my life shifted toward Zionism as the tide of events moved rapidly toward one of the climactic points in the history of the Jewish people. In the year 1917, virtually the entire British people were sympathetic toward the idea of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Arthur James Balfour, Lloyd George, Churchill, General Wilson, Smuts, Sir Ronald Storrs, Viscount Cecil, Leopold Amory, Ormsby Gord, Sir Mark Sykes. Virtually the entire war cabinet supported the claims for restitution of a people which had been divorced from its original homeland for 18 centuries.
His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of the existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country.
While the cabinet was in session, I was waiting outside. So Mark Sykes, chief secretary of the war cabinet, brought the document out to me.
Dr. Weitzman, it's a boy. It's your boy.
Of what has since transpired, I cannot speak. The cup is too full. But I will tell you everything in a parable. In the days of Hitler's rise to power, we came 1 month to South Africa. And to provide us enjoyment, our hosts took us to a great game preserve. It was an area of 8,000 square miles set aside for the preservation of animal life. Within that territory, no animal could be molested. Vera and I saw the famous African springbok. We saw a python curled up on a tree. We heard the thundering of a herd of elephants on the march. And one night, our guide came to us.
Come.
What is it?
Make no noise. Get Dr. Weitzman.
Something up?
Step outside the tent as quietly as possible. Wait until the cloud lifts from the moon.
But I see him. It's a lion.
Yes. Dr. Weitzman, look in the grass. To the left.
Two more.
What do you think, Dr. Weitzman?
They're fortunate animals.
Yes. They have a beautiful home reserved for them. Trees, water, grass, food. 8,000 square miles of territory. An area only slightly less than that of all Palestine.
Where no one can hurt them.
I think it must be a wonderful thing to be an animal on the South African Game Reserve. Much better than being a Jew in the ghetto, where I was born.
A resolution is a sheet of paper covered over with writing.
Between November 2nd, 1917, the day of the Balfour Declaration, and May 15th, 1948, the day of the proclamation of the State of Israel, how many broken promises, how many commissions of inquiry, how many ruined lives, how much sorrow and death intervened. We came back to our deserted land, our land neglected for generations. We saw our hills again, the hills that had lost their trees. We placed our fingers to the stony ground and touched the earth where the good soil had been washed into the valleys and carried to the sea. We have planted again. We have gone to the sea and brought back the earth on our own shoulders. The work is only begun, but the beginning is good. It will not be long. The sound of the cannon will no longer echo in the Negev. Shepherds will go again in peace near the northern borders. Scholars will lay down their guns and go up once more to Mount Scopus, where the Hebrew University stands. And on the holy festivals, the men and women of Israel who serve God with pick and shovel and plow on weekdays will come to the synagogues to thank God for permitting them to do so, for setting them on the threshold of a new life.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Our Eternal Light drama today, Trial and Error, was written by Morton Wishengrad and was based upon the book Trial and Error, the autobiography by Chaim Weizmann, currently being serialized in the New York Herald Tribune, and which will be published on January 19th. The music was arranged and conducted by Morris Mamorsky. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction, and featured as Chaim Weizmann was Peter Capel. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.